Welcome to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. I would like to say I'm going solo today, but that's not true. I have a very awesome guest for you guys. As you know, we've had several special guests in the class and on the podcast. And one of the things that we like to do is invite students from the Profitable Audience course on the podcast. So today, I am very excited to be joined by Kristen Levine, one of our longtime students. Welcome, Kristen.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to be here.
And you guys didn't hear it, but we were just talking about Kristen is a pet expert, and I just got a puppy, so we could probably do an entire podcast on puppies. But
yes, we could.
But we are not going to do that today. We are going to talk about marketing. And the reason why I wanted you guys to meet Kristen is because she, to me, embodies a lot of what we see in our students and a lot of people that email us with questions. And that is basically, Kristen had a PR firm for many, many years, sold it several years ago, and has now moved into the e-commerce space and the marketing space with another brand. And we see that a lot with students where they start one thing, they take it to fruition, they sell it, they get burnt out. There's a variety of reasons, but then they move on to the next thing. So I want to talk about moving on to the next thing, basically.
Yeah, I'm always thinking about the next thing, even when I'm in the middle of the thing right now.
That's every entrepreneur. They're always like, in 5 years down the road, I want to do X, Y, Z. So you had a pet PR firm.
Yes, right. So this is actually 20 years ago in 2003 is when I started my pet PR firm.
Oh, awesome.
And yeah, it was called Fetching Communications.
Nice.
And that came about because I spent 15 years prior to that working in PR for a pretty large animal shelter in the Tampa Bay area. So I had a good PR background, and I had the opportunity there to do a ton of media, like local market media, TV, radio. I was writing for the Tampa Tribune about pet care. So it was really just a natural progression, I felt, to start my own PR firm because there at the time, there really weren't any agencies that were focused exclusively on pet and animal health brands.
Yeah, so I should clarify, when we talk about a pet PR firm, we're not talking about pet movie stars who need publicity.
Right. Oh my gosh, so many people have asked me, how does that work? So pets are your clients? No.
I pay them in chew toys.
That would probably be more fun though, actually.
Yes. So I think that's a really good starting point though, is that you had a background with the SPCA. And then you leverage that into your own business. And I think if you are not completely burnt out on what you do, leveraging what you do for the next thing, I think you would say gave you a huge leg up when you got started.
Gosh. Oh, so true. So true. And I was burnt out for probably 5 years before I started the agency, but I didn't know what else I would do. And I also, it's funny, the whole time I worked at the SPCA, I felt like, you know, I wonder what I'm going to be when I grow up. Like I had no, I didn't even know that this was going to lead to a new business.
And, right.
And I also had a lot of guilt because I loved my organization. We did amazing things for animals in the community and I felt guilty for wanting to leave. So starting my own PR firm made a lot of sense and I was still able to use my media relationships to promote pet adoption for the shelter that I just left. So that made me feel better about leaving.
Well, and I think that's really interesting because not everybody wants to leave because they're disgruntled or unhappy with like leadership or things like that. Sometimes it's just like, hey, I need a change of pace. You know, I'm tired of doing the same exact thing every day. And I like that when you moved into your own firm, you still were able to sort of give back to the ASPCA and, you know, still promote, I think, things that you really believe in.
Right.
So it wasn't like you just went from you were a neurosurgeon and the next thing you know, you're like basket weaving at the craft fair on Sundays. So
right. Exactly. Exactly. It's definitely a through line.
So I guess my first question is, and we talked about this, Liz came on the podcast a couple of months ago and we talked about like, how did you know you were ready to quit? Like, did you start working on the PR firm on the side? Like a lot of people want to know that, like, how do you transition from the W-2 to the 1099?
Mm-hmm. How did I know I wanted to quit? I knew I wanted to quit because I was tired of doing the same thing all the time. And I also didn't feel appreciated, mm-hmm. which, you know, a lot of employees don't feel appreciated.
Right.
Which is why a lot of them leave. And I don't know. I just knew I could do more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think this is a really weird sign that I wanted to do more. I had this like big dream to totally unrelated to be an NFL cheerleader. Okay. And I had tried that. I know we're going to totally, I'll bring it back. I promise. I'll bring it back.
I'm so interested. We could talk the rest of the time about this.
Yeah. So when I first met my husband, moved to Florida, got married, I didn't know anybody. And I heard this ad on the radio for cheerleader tryouts for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I tried out like at age 21, I tried out at age 22. I never even made the first cut. And I was like, screw that. I don't need to do that. So fast forward, I'm 35. I had not yet started my business, but I was just so bored. Like I needed something exciting in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so once again, I hear this audition or this commercial for our auditions. And I had been taking dance class like for the past 10 years, just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, you know what? I've really been doing a lot of dancing. It's really a dance team. It's not really a true cheerleader squad. And so I tried out and I made it that year at age 35. And
we've just ruined your two truths and a lie for the rest of your life for anyone who listens to this.
So true. And then I did a second year and just had such a great time. And this whole time I was still working at the SPCA, which really it kind of exploded my opportunities for media for the shelters. The shelter mm-hmm. really got to cash in on, you know, on that element of what I was doing. And then it was time to hang up the pom-pom, so to speak. When I stopped doing that and I kind of went back to full focus on my job, I realized, oh no, I made this dream come true. Like I have to make a new dream come true. And I honestly didn't really have a big dream to have my own agency. I just had a dream to work for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was it. I gave my resignation. I was crying and, you know, my boss was a good friend and she understood. And she actually, you know, hired me to promote the pet walk that year. So, you know, I was able to, you know, keep them as a client for a couple of years. And then it was just when I was able to fully focus on mm-hmm. the agency, it was amazing how quickly things started happening. You know, I started working with local veterinary specialty practices and I got a gig with Purina, and in my second year, I hired my first employee. So things really started to accelerate. And fortunately the pet industry was really accelerating at the same time.
So, mm-hmm. so this is 20 years ago, which is a long, mm-hmm. like in internet years, that's an eternity.
I know. In my PR firm, this was pre-social media, pre-internet. This was old school PR, faxing press releases to these directors.
So you owned, you're one of those people that owned a fax machine.
Now
I know who to call and I need to fax the one thing a year that I have to fax.
Right.
So I know things have changed a ton, but you seem to have had success, I would say very quickly. I think some of it had to do probably with your relationships. And it's so ironic that you're talking about becoming a cheerleader, because I literally was, I think you had mentioned this before, but I completely forgot. Last night I'm in bed and we're watching the Eagles Cowboys game.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder how many male cheerleaders there are in the NFL now, because my daughter's a competitive cheerleader. You know, mm-hmm. there's always boys that compete. And so I was just curious. Uh-huh. So I'm like Googling and I'm reading about like NFL. I end up on this like rabbit trail of NFL cheerleader for probably like 45 minutes. Uh-huh. And one of the things that I did know, because my brother works for an NBA team, so I'm familiar mm-hmm. with some of the workings of like spirit squads, cheer, whatever they're calling them. You don't make a lot of money doing mm-hmm. it, and you do a ton of PR for the team and in the community. So it mm-hmm. seems like, you know, you worked for the SPCA, you were doing all the PR, then you took the cheerleading thing with you. And so you're doing even more PR. So you had a ton of PR experience to then mm-hmm. jump into your own. And you got people really quickly, which I think is probably says a lot to how much experience you had. But like for someone starting out, because a lot of people are like, how do I get my first customer? How do I do this? Like, what would be your advice for somebody who's just getting started? And they maybe do have some background in what they're doing, so they're not like completely cold.
Sure. Well, all, my first clients were all people I already had relationships with. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, maximize your existing relationships, if that's possible. I mean, if you're going from, you know, bookkeeping to, you know, like you said, basket weaving or crafting, you know, that's going to be difficult. But in my case, it was a little bit easier because I was just doing PR for in a different way. One of our sponsors that always sponsored our pet walk became my client. I had a friend who was a veterinarian, and she referred me to the hospital that she worked for. So those initial clients were, people I knew. And then after that, I'd say after the first year or so, it was a lot of word of mouth recommendations. And then I started attending trade shows and conferences in the pet industry. And that's really key. And that was, again, we're going back a long time. This was before Zoom and online conferences and courses and things like that to help you learn how to do these things. But just being there and being in front of people. And I'm not naturally outgoing. I consider myself an introvert.
Says the cheerleader.
I know. People laugh when I say that, but it's just true. It's true. But I can make myself do these things. For short bursts of time.
Yes. Yes.
And then I go back to my room. When everybody goes out for drinks and dinner, I'm in my room getting room service and watching TV.
This is why we can hang out. This is. So I think that's a really good lesson for people is that, and even though things have changed a ton, I do think leveraging those relationships. And if you're completely jumping to a different bucket, you can still, while you're, working that current job, be attending meetups. It's amazing to me, like, how many meetups are. I mean, I'm in Central Florida. I'm sure if you live in any decent sized city, like, how many are like, hey, there's a meetup at the library, or there's a meetup at Panera, or it's funny. I learned a lot about it from my realtor, because she's like, obviously as a realtor, she's an amazing networker, but. She's always like, oh, I'm part of this group and I'm part of this, and she's always plugged into these places, which for her is obviously how she's getting clients. But I think anybody who wants to go to their own thing, sort of joining those local communities, and it's hard. Like, I don't want to sit here and say, like, show up at the library for your local entrepreneur meetup. It stinks. You won't know anybody. It'll be super awkward. Unless you're like a massive extrovert, it's tough. But I think it's something that's really important still today, because it's a way to get your face in front of people, which I think is still more valuable than sending an email.
Absolutely. And I would say too that back then there were no online courses for how to start an agency.
Yes.
But I joined a local business coaching group that would meet once a month, and we'd have lunch together, and it was, everybody had different businesses, but that was an incredible learning experience. And we kind of cheered each other on and supported each other and helped each, it was like a mini mastermind.
Right.
And that's another thing that you can do online today is to, develop a mastermind of your own peers.
Yeah, I think masterminds, and we've done a couple podcasts on masterminds. So that's definitely something really important. Now, fast forwarding 20 years or 15 years, at some point you decided you wanted to sell this business. And I think a lot of people want to sell their businesses. Did you start it thinking, I'm going to build this company up and sell it? Or I'm sure that was just something that happened along the way.
I didn't know anything about business, Tony. I didn't know that was a thing that you started businesses and sold them and then started new businesses. I had no idea. And which is probably why I was kind of desperate to get out, because I was so burned out after about, the first 10 years. At one point we had, I think it was 12 employees and like W-2 employees.
Yeah.
And the management headaches, meeting payroll, I wasn't doing any of the things that I was good at or loved. Mm-hmm. I was just running this company and just being miserable. And at the same time, my father passed away, and then that kind of like turned this light bulb light bulb on for me that said, you know, I'm in the pet industry. Like, how am I not loving it? You know, mm-hmm. I'm missing out on an opportunity to enjoy what I do. And that's when two things happened, really. Right before that burnout, that full-on burnout kicked in, what was happening was we were getting PR clients, but we would also get brands coming to Fetching to hire me to be a spokesperson. This is before we were called influencers, but they needed somebody that could go on TV and talk about their products. Yep. Somebody that was, you know, credible. And so I started getting some really nice gigs with like Bissell and Toyota and stuff like that, which I loved doing because now I'm back to helping pet owners. Mm-hmm. And I realized after it took me a while to figure this out that, you know, I really missed what I did at the SPCA, which was helping pet lovers. Mm-hmm. And now all I was doing was helping pet businesses grow, not, you know, but the downside of that was that I wasn't doing as much new business for my PR clients. Mm-hmm. So the income I was generating as a spokesperson was just going to kind of support payroll. Mm-hmm. it was a mess. And so I knew, you know, there were days I just wanted to walk away and just let it crumble, but I knew I couldn't do that and that I would really regret that. And so I found a broker that specialized in mergers and acquisitions of PR agencies. And from the point that I initially contacted him, it took about 1 year to find an ideal partner, which in my case was French West Vaughan, which is a large consumer marketing agency in the Southeast in Raleigh. And they had a fantastic reputation and they were looking to acquire smaller firms to build out their areas of specialty. Mm-hmm. And they were really excited about having a pet specialty. So it was a really great fit. And I was able to negotiate, you know, terms where I could, you know, just kind of serve as senior counsel and help generate new business for the practice, but also have my own time to start something else, which mm-hmm. is where the blog came in, Pet Living. And eventually my private label brand.
Okay, so I want to talk about this real quick because mm-hmm. as you know, you've been to Seller Summit. We partner with Quiet Light, mm-hmm. great partner. They help, I think mostly in the e-commerce and blogging space, people sell or buy businesses. And we love the folks there. They're great to work with. We highly recommend them. Since you've done this personally, like how much do you recommend, like could you have done it without a broker? Because I know people are like, oh, I don't want to pay the fees. Like I'll do this yeah. myself. How for? And I know you didn't use Quiet Light, but just right. in far as using any company, mm-hmm. how do you think it got you more money? Was it more, I mean, do you think it was worth it?
I think it was definitely worth it. Yeah. I mean, I felt like the fees were reasonable. Mm-hmm. And just the fact, just the prospectus that they put together, like I wouldn't have known how to do that.
Yeah.
And even if I Googled it and figured it out, it wouldn't have been anywhere near the level of, you know, professionalism it needed to be.
Yeah.
And it's also so helpful and valuable to get an outside opinion on your yeah. business. And
yeah.
people see benefits that you don't see. And also people see negatives that you know are there, but you kind of don't yeah. want to admit to. So I would highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. Can you do it alone? Of course, absolutely. People do it all the time on their
yeah.
own. But I think you probably leave money on the table and you would have a lot more stress and
yeah.
difficulty. It would probably take you longer to do it on your own.
Yeah, I definitely think as far as the brokerages that I'm familiar with, they do a great job of making sure you have everything in order. Because I've seen a lot of deals fall through because certain things were not disclosed, not on purpose, but
yeah.
because you don't know what you need to,
no.
you know. And most of us are not bookkeepers in our spare time. So it's right, nice right. to have a third party come in and help you get your crap together, basically. I'm also curious about the spokesperson thing because we actually haven't talked a ton about this in the course, although it's something that mm-hmm. I used to do a lot. Mm-hmm. And I actually, I enjoyed working with the bigger brands, doing the media. You know, how did you get into that side of it? I'm sure you leveraged like your relationships and your contacts. Mm-hmm. But can you just like let people understand a little bit more about that? Because I think it is, people are still doing this today. This has not gone away. Yeah. It's changed right. mediums a little bit, but it is still something that can be exceptionally lucrative for yes. content creators.
Absolutely. I believe the way, well, you know, I did have that background in media from the SPCA. So I did have that going for me. But what was happening is our PR clients, in many cases, you know, when you're doing a press release or you're pitching an outlet about your client's product, you need an expert at the company that can obviously speak knowledgeably and who's comfortable on air or in whatever the medium is. And believe it or not, there were a lot of times when they didn't have that person either.
So I believe it started out as a result of some of our PR clients not having a spokesperson internally that either had a background in pet care or, you know, pet lifestyle, or they didn't want to be in front of a camera or on the radio or talking to, you know, a journalist. And that happened more often than you would think, because a lot of people start businesses in the pet space that really don't have a background in animal care. So that's how it started. We would need an expert, and they would say, well, you know, can you do it? And so that would become part of the scope of work. And then after a while, as I said, I really enjoyed that work, and it was fun for me and it was easy for me, and they loved it because they didn't have to mess with it.
Yep.
And so then I, you know, started kind of putting myself out there as a spokesperson.
Yeah. And that can be super lucrative for those listening, especially if you're comfortable on camera, because a lot of people are not. And so you would be surprised at not just big shows like the Today Show and Good Morning America, that they need all these filler spots with little fun tidbits, but even your local, like, it's very easy to get on local TV. I don't think people understand that they, especially that like 12 o'clock news and the five, like when they're not reporting on all the murders in your town, you know, they're looking for that lifestyle content. And if you have any sort of, like, if you have a YouTube channel or anything like that, I would say you could pitch yourself to these local networks. And as long as you have a decent camera presence, they're always looking for people to come on and talk about any topic in the, whether it's if you do recipes or cooking or frugal shopping. I mean, like right now, every frugal person I know is on the news talking about how you can save it, you know, this store or that store this year. So with the holidays. So yeah, I think that's a really interesting way to sort of build revenue. Only downside, and even time for money, but other than that,
that is true. And I was gonna say, even if you don't have a YouTube channel but you have a social media account that you know, has video, you just have to be able to present well and to be articulate and to know your stuff. So I would definitely encourage people to reach out to their local television station because they do need, I mean, you know, we've seen some of the filler content, right? Like there's not a high bar sometimes depending on where you live. I should say that though. But one interesting thing that ended up happening is, like I mentioned earlier, I was getting a lot of these opportunities, and I realized right before I sold the agency, I realized this is a separate business. Mm-hmm. I don't have to sell this. And so I sold the PR agency, but was able to maintain my own clients, which were some of those same brands, for a specific scope of work that wasn't competing, of course, with the agency.
So you sell the agency. Now you're on to what you want to be when you grow up, part three.
Exactly.
So you have the blog, Pet Living, right? What's the URL? Is it petliving.com?
No, it's not. It's KristenLevine.com.
Kristen Levine. I knew there was a catch there.
Yeah. It's a URL I've had for probably 20 years. So that's what it is. And so again, I was just really didn't know what I was doing with the blog. I just knew that I really enjoyed helping pet owners solve problems, and I enjoyed creating content. I didn't know you could make money with a blog. Like I was still getting the brand partnership opportunities. And then I started figuring out how, I can kind of subsidize my content and create more content you know, by offering to do product reviews or roundups and that sort of thing. And so, and then I figured out that you can make money through affiliate marketing. And so I, you know, I became an Amazon affiliate and started promoting other products through affiliate links. And then I figured out you could generate ad revenue. So I didn't know all this going into it. I just kind of figured it out thanks to your courses and Steve's other course along the way. It's how I really kind of started figuring all this out. But to this day, I will say this is not a bad thing, but I see it as not a great thing. Because of my background and my comfort level working with brands, to this day, the majority of my blog revenue is generated by brands. So like I said, like sounds like it's not a problem, but it is a problem when you're trading time for money.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think it's a great way to earn money. And it's probably in like 2012, 2013, that was my primary source of revenue, easily into the six figures just from brand deals. So while it doesn't probably provide the same level of flexibility as a website built more like on affiliate revenue and things like that, I definitely think if that's the way you want to go, I will never knock somebody for doing that, because I know that for me, the brand deals led to a ton of other opportunities, because once you get yourself out there and it's kind of this incestuous circle with like every niche, right? So like the lifestyle, like the cooking people, it's the same five bloggers doing everything. Right. And like the home decor is the same. Like I can tell you the same people are on the Today Show that were on the Today Show in 2010.
Right, right.
Because if you're good, they keep having you back because you're very low risk.
Exactly.
Our friend Erin from $5 Dinners, I think, has been on every morning show, TV. Like, I mean, she's cooked with Nick Lachey and Rachel Ray, and because she's a solid commodity. Like, they know if Erin comes on, she will deliver. So, Erin has made a ton of money doing stuff like this, and so have many other people. So, it's definitely not a pack up your stuff and live in Mexico for 3 years business model. No. But if you're still, and a lot of people, this is the other thing I think people don't think about. If you're still in the position where you like have young kids or you have like pets, you can't just leave and go everywhere all the time. So like having a business that does trade time for money isn't the end of the world sometimes. So
true.
I highly recommend looking into that, especially if you feel like you have the right personality for media. I want to talk about how you got into e-commerce though, because you went from helping brands to being the brand.
Yes. Yeah. So. I think, I started Steve's Profitable Online Store course, I want to say like 2017. So this was like the year after I sold the agency. So I was doing, you know, I was doing that work. I had the blog that was doing, you know, brand deals because I hadn't figured out the other opportunities yet. But And I've always loved branding, the whole exercise of branding. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I really want to have my own brand, but it took me forever, as it takes a lot of people, to figure out what is, you know, well, I knew my niche would be pets, but I didn't have the first idea of what it was going to be. And I did have an epic failure in that I actually decided that my product was going to be temporary tattoos, not for pets, but for pet lovers.
Okay.
You know, like, you know, little paw prints on your arm or whatever.
Okay.
And there was this trend. Everybody at my gym was wearing those metallic
tattoos. Yes.
Yeah. And they were so fun. And so anyway, I started a line of temporary tattoos, launched them on Amazon. And then I have to say, I don't know if they would have been successful, but very quickly I completely lost interest in it. But I actually lost interest before I launched it, but I felt like, you know what, I started this. I need to at least go through the process to understand it better. And I did. And I learned what a challenge e-commerce is. Mm-hmm. And kind of walked away from that. And then it became really obvious to me about a year later that my affiliate income, the vast majority of my affiliate income was coming from pet cleaning products that I was recommending.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where I was generating enough revenue for those companies that it was just a no-brainer. Like, this is what I have to do. This is the answer. So that's, you know, it's not, I never thought I would be doing pet stain and odor remover as my private label brand, but it's been great so far. I mean, you know, I'm still really early on and having some, having, you know, many challenges. But I guess what's cool about it is it worked, like what you guys taught us. it actually works, you know. It might not be the thing that you want to go to market with, but as long as you can stay passionate about it and find, you know, a differentiator, it can really work.
Yeah, it's interesting because I still am friends with, I mean, not still, but I still have tons of blogger friends that are still blogging after 15 plus years in the blogging space. And they have no idea about anything with e-commerce, which I didn't either. Like when I met Steve, I thought Amazon sold everything and that they made everything, right? Like Amazon just controlled the world, which they still do, but just in a very different way. But I always tell bloggers, I'm like, look at your Amazon affiliate revenue. Look what people are buying from you. And at some point you realize that like, I could make more money selling this product if I manufactured it, you know, or even if I private label, you know. Sure. And I think there's such an opportunity for people who have worked really hard to build an audience because, you know, we meet a lot of people who are on the other side, right? They are only e-commerce. They got into it, you know, who knows what they did before, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, they're struggling to build the audience side and the branding side because if you don't have a background in that, that can be really tough. And I always tell content creators, you have such an advantage over, you can, and that's the thing is, I think you can get into a more competitive industry because of it. Because you are in a very, pets is a very competitive space. But you've been able to sort of move in there. And I think one of those reasons is that you, one, have the background, two, leverage the content creation, and then three, could leverage those relationships that you've had.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think just speaking of relationships, I think relationships are probably the most underused, at least for me, they were early on. I was always hesitant to leverage my relationships, but you know, as you learn and grow, you get more comfortable doing that. But yeah, I'm very grateful that I had the audience first before I created my product because this is hard enough, without having to create the product and build the audience.
Yeah.
So I really admire those folks that are doing that.
Well, and we get this question a lot is, what should I do first? Should I build the audience or e-commerce? And it's kind of like, it really just, there's not a right answer. I think people hate that we're like, it depends. but I think it does. I mean, I think, you know, building an audience is a longer game. It takes a long time to build an audience. You can have success in e-commerce quickly, especially on Amazon, if you find the absolute right product, right time, right place. You can't just jump into the pet world probably and have success without the audience. So I do think that the niche matters a ton when people are asking that question. And you're a perfect example of someone who was able to do that in a really competitive space.
Yeah, it's kind of sad when I go to these trade shows for the pet industry, and you'll see all these new companies, and then the next year they're gone. And and pets specifically is a space that people jump into because they love pets.
Yes,
but and that's great, but it's not a reason to jump into a particular industry or niche.
Yes, because how many temporary tattoos do you have in your basement?
Hundreds. Would you like some?
No. So I think your story is one that's so interesting because you've kind of done all the things that Steve and I talk about, but in a very like methodical way, unintentionally.
I was going to say, really, it appears to be methodical because it definitely wasn't. I'm glad it looks that way.
But I think it's sort of like, I think people discredit the value of like time and experience and relationships in the success of people. So they hear someone's success story and people don't usually have a chance to like give you every background detail of their life, right? And so what usually gets missed is the fact that they worked for the SPCA for 15 years. They had those local relationships that they could leverage when they started a new business almost immediately, right? So
right.
I think those things get missed a lot of the time, and people are like, I don't get it, why they're just so successful so quickly. Because I think for your PR firm, right. you had really quick success. But you probably yeah. wouldn't have had that much success without your previous experience.
No, definitely. Not at all. So obviously it's great if you can leverage what you currently are doing for a job. But even if you don't like that space, you want to get into a completely different industry or niche, there are still relationships you can leverage, and there mm-hmm. are still skills that you use today that will be beneficial in whatever it is you do. And you just really have to kind of focus on those. And how do you use that to get just one step further?
Yep. Okay, so let's give a shout out to your pet products that I was using this morning.
Sure. Oh, awesome. Oh, thank you for that. Kinder Bean. Let me see here. There.
Yes.
Kinder there we Bean go. Is the name of the brand. The website is kinderbeanpet.com, but selling on Amazon as well. Right now we have a stain and all natural enzymatic stain and odor remover for, as we say, peas, poops, and pukes. And I'm launching a laundry formula. Just found out it got to the warehouse last week. So we'll be launching the laundry formula both on the website and on Amazon.
Very exciting. I will say, as a user of the enzyme remover cleaner, I don't even know. It's called desperation when you need it. It smells so good. I will say, like, and it was funny because our mutual friend Andrea also is a big fan, and she was telling me one day how great it smelled, and I was like, "That it does not. Like, it doesn't smell that good." Because at that point, I didn't have a puppy and didn't need it.
Right.
But yes, it smells awesome, and so Thank far you. The puppy doesn't ever go back and pee in that same spot. She pees in all the other spots. So. Yeah.
There's so many places to pee in a little time.
Yeah. The one rug I have in my house got put in the garage. I was like, we're not doing this. We can clean tile and hardwood all day long. We are not going to.
Oh, easily. Easily. Well, and you've only had her for a few weeks, right?
Yeah, she's 10 weeks old. So she's okay. a baby. I mean, she's huge, but she's a baby.
She'll learn quickly.
Yeah, she's getting there.
I adopted a little dog during the pandemic, and we'd never had a little dog before, and it took us 9 months to housebreak her.
Yeah, little dogs are my doodle was a pain in the butt. I don't think she was like, I think she still like had accidents up until a couple years old, like just when someone would come to the door, you know, the standard type stuff. This dog needs to learn how to go outside because they think she's going to be about 100 pounds. So I don't need that in my house.
No, you don't. No, you're going to need a lot of Kinder Bean.
Yeah. I'm going to have, do you have a case, a by the case discount?
Put me on a gallon jug.
Yes.
It's going to cost $300 to ship it to you.
That's right. And your website where you blog about all things pet is kristenlevine.com. So That's if right. you guys have pets, check it out. It's when I got the puppy, I was like reading your articles almost that, I think it was that night or the next night. So very good resources for pet Thank owners. You. And two questions for you when we close it out. One, what's one piece of advice you could give to someone just starting out? Like, what would you tell them?
I would say... Well, and I've heard you all say this a lot, but it's so true. I would say just start, take a leap of faith. Because once you commit to starting, it's so exciting, you know, and you free up mental space. You find the time to work on it. I'm not saying quit your job before you start, but, but start small, because when I look back on, when I started, it was just so many baby steps, to get to each, business, each level of, what I consider to be success. So just get started. And what was the second question?
I haven't asked it yet.
Okay.
This is a shot in the dark, because I actually don't know if you're a reader, but what is a book you would recommend for people? If you're not a reader, you can just say, I watch Yellowstone, and that's fine too.
I'm a reader. I really love I think it's called The One Thing.
Oh, yes. That's a great book.
Yeah, it's a great book. I can't say that I've, you know, followed it, but it really helps you understand how important it is to focus and not to try to do too many things at one time.
Yep.
So I've actually read that book a couple of times, so I'd say that's my favorite.
Oh, that's a great book. I don't think we've actually recommended that book on the podcast before, so
yeah, great recommendation. It's a pretty popular business book. So.
Yeah, we can put it in the show notes too for people so they can grab it. Well, thank you so much. It was fun chatting with you. I feel like we get to chat about other things, but it was fun learning more about your story, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.